This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. Joseph Stiglitz and Linda Bilmes have attempted an accounting of the present and future costs of the invasion of Iraq in their new book, The $3 Trillion War, The True Cost of the Iraq Conflict. Joseph Stiglitz was on the Council of Economic Advisers from 1993 to 97, serving as its chairman for 2 years. In 2001, he was awarded the Nobel Prize for Economics, and he's now on the faculty of Columbia University. I spoke to Stiglitz about some of the war's little-known costs, many of which he says will be borne by taxpayers for decades. Well, Joseph Stiglitz, welcome to Fresh Air. Now, what does the administration estimate the war is costing or has cost?
Well, when we went to the war, the administration said it was going to cost around $50 billion. That's what we're spending now upfront in operations every 3 months. These upfront costs are only a fraction of what the war is going to cost us. There are large numbers of people being injured, disabled. We estimate about 40% of the people fighting in Iraq will suffer from disabilities. That was the experience in the Gulf War. There have been 1.6 million people in Iraq. By the time this is over, it probably will exceed 2 million. And that means in a realistic scenario, we're going to have to be paying disability payments and health care for these hundreds of thousands of returning veterans at a cost we estimate to be in excess of $600 million. So
$600 billion.
So the point is that they've only talked about the upfront cost. They've underestimated the magnitude of those upfront costs. There are a lot more costs of this war.
Now, you write in this book that the Defense Department flunked its annual audit for the 10th year running last year. I've read a lot of government's audits, and they always find some deficiencies or others. What do you mean? What's the significance of the Defense Department flunking
these? These are material deficiencies. I mean, as you say, they're always little things, but the Defense Department is the only department outside the Department of Homeland, which is a new department, that has failed to meet its accounting requirements. We've passed a law saying that government departments have to be responsible. The Defense Department is the main failure in this way.
And what's wrong with its books?
Well, part of the problem is you can't figure them out. The whole point of accounting is so you know where the money is going. And there are large amounts of money that we just don't know where it's going.
Now, apart from all the difficulties of penetrating the Defense Department's budget, and you say that it's fraught with problems which auditors have found, you also say that the Bush administration's method of seeking funding for the war itself has helped to obscure its cost. Why?
Not only obscuring the cost, but also make it more difficult for there to be appropriate oversight. This war has been financed by emergency appropriations. Now, in the beginning, it's perfectly understandable why you need emergency appropriations. You don't plan on a war years ahead. But 5 years into the war, we should not be using emergency appropriations to finance this conflict.
Well, let's look at some of the effects on the federal budget that are not included in the administration's specific requests for funding for the Iraq war. Now, there's a regular defense budget, which is there every year. Can you tell how much of that budget is really going to the Iraq war? How do you get an idea of that?
Well, in the last 5 years, defense budget, outside of the amounts actually explicitly appropriated for Iraq and Afghanistan, have cumulatively gone up about $500 billion. Now, we have no new enemies. We're not spending a lot of money on Star Wars programs that we hadn't previously planned on. The question is, what is this money going for? Some of it is clearly directly related to the Iraq War, the fact that we have to pay more for recruiting, we have to pay more for sign-up and reenlistment bonuses. So what we do is take a very conservative approach and say approximately a quarter of that amount is attributable to the war. Almost surely more than that, but the whole point of the way we've approached this these calculations is to try to take a conservative estimate, because we didn't want to get into a nitpicking fight over each one of the items that makes this huge tally.
All right, so this adds up to a, in effect, hidden cost of how much?
Well, we allocate in our calculations about $125 billion to this item.
Wow.
But then there are lots of other areas of government budget that are affected. The VA, obviously, through the disability benefits, through the health care benefits, Social Security. When veterans return and they're disabled, which there are large numbers will be disabled, they can qualify for Social Security disability benefits. And so this will drain our Social Security program. So it will shows up in actually a large number of other government programs.
Many of those costs which will be borne for decades, if not generations to come, right? Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
I mean, part of the cost that's going to be borne for generations to come arise from the fact that we have financed this war through deficit. In fact, as we went to the war, we actually lowered the tax, especially on upper-income Americans. And that means that this war has entirely been financed, in a sense, by borrowing. And so as a result of that, the national debt today from the war alone is around $800 billion more than it was 5 years ago. And there's interest on this amount and there's interest on that interest, and that these amounts will just accumulate for years to come.
Now, another feature of the United States effort in Iraq has been the extensive use of private contractors, both for construction and infrastructure work, as well as significant security operations. To what extent has that driven the cost of the war up, and can you find those costs easily?
Well, you can't find these costs, and you can't find many of the other costs. I mean, one of the things that I find an outrage in a way is how difficult it was to get many of the numbers that should be publicly available. The government doesn't even disclose the full number of people being injured. They only disclose the number of people injured in hostile actions, not the total injured in Iraq. We had to use the Freedom of Information Act to actually get those numbers. Going back to the contractors, part of the problem is the contractors are expensive. The cost of a security guard can be as much as $1,000 a day. But it turns out that we – not only do we pay these huge prices for these contractors, but we also pay insurance premium. And then if they get injured or killed in a hostile action, we actually wind up also paying the death benefits or the disability benefits. This is another item that doesn't show up in the Defense Department budget but shows up elsewhere in the government's cost.
And what's the scale of that spending?
That's in the billions. We provided an estimate of several billions of dollars for this. But to be fair, no one knows how high these costs really are. We took, a very conservative approach to providing a lower bound on these estimates.
Well, I wanted to talk a bit about some of the costs that are associated with the death and injuries to GIs, apart from what they get in government care. Now, there is a death benefit that is paid to soldiers that are killed. What is it?
It's about $500,000.
And then you also calculate that there are losses for a soldier who dies because his family no longer has that earning capacity. How did you include that in the toll here?
Well, if an individual got injured or killed in an automobile accident, he would get compensation that's far greater than $500,000. Every day you pick up the newspaper and you see somebody lost a leg and they got a jury verdict of $6 million, $7 million. The government has a systematic approach to valuing life, to valuing injury. It's called the value of statistical life.
That's the value of statistical life, you say?
That's right. Yeah. It's the value of statistical life in the case of somebody who has lost their life. There is a similar concept for an injury. When the government comes to evaluate whether to have a regulation, a safety regulation, environmental regulation, it tries to assess the cost of the regulation versus the benefit. And the benefit is assessed in terms of the number of lives that will be saved. And then they look at the value of these lives. And the number they typically use is in the order of magnitude of $7 to $8 million per life. That's much larger than the $500,000 that shows up in the cost to the government in its budget.
And if I understand, if I can just understand what you're saying that in certain cases where the government is doing cost benefits analysis, the cost of a death caused by, say, environmental pollution would be valued at $7 million. But a GI who dies gets a flat $500,000. Am I hearing you right?
You are hearing me right. And so what we point out that there's a big discrepancy, and we ought to be counting that discrepancy as part of the cost of the war.
You also look at the effects of the war on the economy in the United States and nationally and conclude that conservatively there's a $187 million cost on the U.S. economy. This is very complex stuff, but in a nutshell, how do you figure that out?
Well, there are several parts of the cost to our macroeconomy, to our aggregate economy. The first part is the fact that the war has led to higher oil prices. When we went to the war, the cost of oil, it's hard to remember, the cost of oil was $25 a barrel. Now it's just reached $100 a barrel. The futures markets realized that there would be increased demands from China, from developing countries. But they expected that there would be a corresponding increase in supply, ample supplies from the Middle East at low cost, and that the price would remain for the next decade around $25 a barrel. The war changed that equation. In our estimates, we are very conservative, and we say only $5 of the increase of the price of oil since the beginning of the war is attributable to the war. In a more moderate, more realistic estimate, it's $10. I think realistically, it's actually much higher than that.
That's per barrel, right?
That's per barrel.
Right.
And in our very conservative estimate, we say that the price increase will only last for 7 years. The market is expecting these price increases to last at least through 2015. So the fact is that the high price of oil, which the war brought out, has a strong cost to the economy. Americans are spending money importing oil. So money is going to Saudi Arabia and other oil-producing countries. And that means that not only are we shipping money abroad, the money doesn't have the multiplier effects that it would have had it been spent here at home. And the much more realistic number is a number that is much larger than a number in excess of $300 billion. That's just the first cost. There's a second set of costs that related to the fact that money spent in Iraq itself doesn't stimulate the economy in the way that money spent at home would have spent. If you spend money on an Iraqi contractor or a Naples contractor working in Iraq, it doesn't have the second, third round effects that we would have spent, say, on building a road or an education here at home. So that, too, depresses the economy. Thirdly, if we had spent the money on investments in the United States, it would have led to longer-term economic growth. And fourthly, because we borrow so much, as mentioned before, we funded this war by borrowing, there is a huge increase in our debt, and that too exerts a negative effect on our economy. And when you include all of these, you get a picture of a macroeconomic cost that is well in excess of a trillion dollars.
You know, I mean, the economy is so vast and complicated and has so many hundreds of interconnected and moving parts. I mean, that's one of the reasons that economists disagree, it seems to me, about just the impact of just about everything. But I'm wondering, and I realize I'm talking to a Nobel Prize-winning economist here, but how you can be confident of an analysis in which, you know, the interactions are so complex. I mean, for example, I mean, should you not subtract the stimulus effect of this stream of payments, I mean, however dreadful they are, to injured veterans and people on Social Security disagreement? I mean, isn't there a spending multiplier as those dollars ripple through the American economy?
Well, that's why we were very conservative in our approach. We recognized that those dollars would have an effect. So when we looked at a comparison between what happened to the money spent on Iraq and other forms of expenditure, we only assumed a fraction of that money was spent actually in Iraq. The rest of the money that you talked about that would be spent by our disabled people, that we treated just like any other kind of expenditure. So we were fairly careful to take what you said into account. Actually, the mystery as we were writing the book was, given how strong our analysis, and I think this is an analysis that I think that most people would have accepted, how strong the negative effects of the war should have been on the economy, why didn't the economy seem weaker than it was? And the answer that we came to was that we were living on borrowed money, that easy money from the Fed, lax regulation from government regulators enabled people to take out hundreds of billions of dollars out of their houses, what we call mortgage equity withdrawals, and the hundreds of billions of dollars, a housing bubble. All of that clouded over, hid these negative effects. But because we were living on borrowed money and borrowed time, a day of reckoning had to come, and now it has come.
Well, Joseph Stiglitz, the cost that you described seems so gargantuan, so enduring, and the damage to the economy you described seems so almost catastrophic. I mean, what havoc have we reaped on the nation? How bad is this?
Well, we're a rich country. We can, in some sense, afford it. If we were a poor country, it would have wreaked enormous havoc. But $3 trillion we can afford. But you have to ask the question, what is the opportunity cost? What could we have done with that $3 trillion? Could we have spent the money in ways that would leave our economy stronger, our society more secure? The war against terrorism, the war for democracy in a better position. And I think when you ask questions that way, you have to say, no, this money was not well spent. Just to take one example, in Africa, we're worried about the increasing presence of China. We're spending $5 billion a year in Africa. That's roughly 10 days fighting. If we include the full-on cost, including the cost of disability, we're talking about 5 days fighting is what we are contributing to help the poorest continent in the world. For a fraction of what we are spending in Iraq, we could have repaired our Social Security system for the next 50, 75 years, put it on sound financial footing. So if you start listing all the problems our society faces, you realize that we have a new metric, a new way of thinking about it. What fraction of what we have spent in the Iraq War would solving this particular problem have cost? And when you start thinking that way, you realize that this war has cost us a great deal.
Well, Joseph Stiglitz, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Joseph Stiglitz is co-author with Linda Bilmes of The $3 Trillion War, The True Cost of the Iraq Conflict.